There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to Mortal and Strong, the podcast, where each episode we share the interview from one of the voices from our project. Each episode we will be discussing one area of women's health from a real human who is sharing their story to help others. To learn more about the Mortal and Strong project, please visit our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And now for today's episode.
Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Mortal and Strong. I'm Laura.
And I'm Liz.
And today we're joined on the sofa by Jen, who has endometriosis, and we're hearing all about her incredible story with what she's been through, but how she's empowering and advocating for everyone else. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited, honestly.
Right, so we have you here today, and we're going to start, as we have always started, with a little bit of a fun round. We're doing some quickfire questions. So, board game or card game?
Oh, board game.
Audiobook or paperback?
I'm a massive book nerd. That's so hard. Quick. Yeah, book, paperback.
Okay. Paddleboard or canoe?
Paddleboard.
Cheesecake or sponge?
Sponge. I don't know why I was delayed on that one. Sponge.
Oh, see, I love a cheesecake. I'm probably more of a cheesecake fan. Chocolate, especially. Hotel or glamping?
Hotel.
Ice cream in a cone or in a cup?
If it's a wafer, then yeah. I'd go cup. But if it's like one of those waffle cones, I'd go cone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bar of soap or liquid soap?
Liquid soap.
Club or pub?
Oh, pub.
Fresh flowers or a potted plant?
Fresh flowers.
And dishwasher or washing up?
Oh, dishwasher. Who's going to say washing up?
Thank you for joining us today. We're really, really pleased to have you here, and we can't wait to hear all about your story. So let's go back in time to a time prior to your diagnosis and tell us a little bit about tell us a little bit about who you were, what you're up to, where you were in the world.
So pre-diagnosis. So if we're going back to pre-diagnosis, I ran a bakery. And I did that for 8 years, and we did some really cool things. We baked cakes that went on to be made for like King Charles.
Okay, hang on, hold there. Why have we not got one of your cakes in the studio?
Because I haven't baked for 3 years because I sold the business because my pain got too much.
Right.
And I've not actually baked for 3 years.
Oh, maybe a challenge. Next time we see.
Yeah, definitely.
So where was this bakery?
It was in Cambridge, but we did stuff all over. We sent cakes out to New York. We took a wedding cake to Dublin.
Wow. What sort were you sort of into, you know, traditional cakes? Were you into sort of modelling different things
so
on cakes?
It was very much based on different flavours. So at one point we had like 60 different flavours.
Wow.
And then also weddings, which the focus was like floral designs, like fresh flowers and things like that, and pressed edible flowers and all that kind of thing.
So
it was a lot of fun and I really enjoyed it. Unfortunately my pain got too bad.
So how did things start? What were the first signs? And we laughed when we said pre-diagnosis because what we're about to talk about often starts actually looking back when puberty hits.
I was 11.
Yeah, so my first symptom, although I didn't know it was a symptom, was when my first period started, and that's common for a lot of people with these conditions. I just remember being on the floor of my parents' bedroom. I couldn't straighten my back. I was just in like hysterical crying. I was in so much pain. It was my first one, so I didn't really know what to expect, but I definitely did not expect that. Like, no very, very basic menstrual education that I received ever kind of.
I was gonna say, you probably
had
what, from school or from your mum, who taught you about periods?
So in school it was mentioned, it was kind of like, girls bleed once a month.
Here's a pad.
Yeah. We didn't even get that.
Really?
No.
And we've got told an egg cup over a course of a week, that's as much blood that you should lose.
But how often
do you? Yeah. So we were never told that. Gosh. No, nothing. So I had no idea what was normal or abnormal as a period.
And also, how do you know how much blood you're losing? Because you never put an egg cup down there to check.
Yeah, right. And so I was fortunate enough, that my mum had endometriosis.
Right.
So she kind of recognised some early signs and took me to the doctor very, very quickly. But unfortunately, I was just completely told it's normal. She's just got really bad periods. She's just one of the unlucky ones.
So was this heavy periods and pain, or just heavy periods at this point?
Both.
Okay.
So it was exceptionally painful, exceptionally heavy, would flood through products and clothes.
And how did that make you, as you say, mortifying, but how did it make you feel? Did you feel like you were kind of abnormal to your friends and your peers?
I didn't think my period was abnormal. I thought I was abnormal.
Right.
So I thought everybody was going through the same thing, but I was just unable to cope with it and to deal with it. And the more the doctors told me that was normal, the more that effect was on me. I was like, well, if it's normal, why can't I cope? Why am I so weak?
You don't think about that side of it, do you?
No. No, the problem is, it is medical gaslighting and medical dismissal.
Of course, yeah.
And with any kind of gaslighting, the more it happens, the more you internalise it and you start to gaslight yourself.
And if you're the abnormal one, then why are you not coping with the pain? Why are you sort of moaning about the fact you're leading through things? I don't know about yourself, but when you're at that age, you also don't have those conversations with your close friends. It's not like you go to school going, oh, what was your period like last week?
No.
Because it's quite an embarrassing thing to talk about. And I think when we were made to feel like it's a bit taboo.
Yeah, 100%. It isn't an embarrassing thing to talk about. We've been made to feel like it's an embarrassing thing to talk about.
Yep.
And I think the first genuinely open conversation I had with a friend about periods was in my mid-20s.
Wow. So a long time after you had this problem.
And it took me so long to realise, like, actually not everybody was going through this level of pain every month.
And had you been started on the pill or anything like that?
Yeah, so basically when I was 11, 12, I'd gone back so often, they were just like, look, this is the best we've got. It's normal. Just put her on the pill. It will calm it down. She'll be fine. It will settle. So I got put on the pill very early. And that was it. There was no follow-up. There was no investigation as to why there was any pain. There was no check-up over the whole time I was on the pill, which was 22 years.
Wow.
So it's symptom management, which can be super helpful for some people. And for me, it meant that I could kind of get through a month. I was still having horrific periods, but it meant the rest of the month was manageable. And it can be a lifeline for so many people. But what a lot of people don't realise is that endometriosis is hugely progressive. And when I came off the pill, in a bit of like a lockdown madness, I don't know what I was thinking. I suddenly realised I have never had a cycle. Like, I don't actually know what my cycle is. So I was like, oh, let's try it. It was 2021.
And how old are you at that point?
I was 31, 32.
And is this the point where you're beginning to question? You still hadn't got a diagnosis at this point.
No.
You're still just carrying on.
Yeah.
So I'd gone to the doctors a lot of times. A lot of people were like, well, why didn't you say something? And I'm like, I did.
Did your mum have an actual diagnosis of endometriosis?
Yes. So she had a hysterectomy when I was a toddler, because back then, another myth, was that a hysterectomy cures endometriosis. And it doesn't. Again, it can give some people symptom relief because they're no longer having a period.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not cure endometriosis. But she was unfortunately at the time where that was the kind of prevailing sort of theory, I suppose. And I was already calling it endometriosis by that point. I was like, I'm pretty sure I have endometriosis. Everything I've read, I'm just so certain. I was calling it Edna because I didn't have a diagnosis. So I didn't feel like I could kind of claim that for myself. So I just used to call it Edna and be like, oh, Edna's being a bit of a bitch this month. Although I did find out later that everybody I know seems to have like a really adorable Aunt Edna. And so I'm just like insulting all the Ednas of the world and I felt really bad. So yeah, I sort of came off the pill and for no other reason than I just wanted to figure out what was going on in my body.
And I'm cringing.
You know what's coming, right?
Yeah, I know.
Like, you know what's coming.
That's what happened to me.
And it went from having a terrible period to within 2 to 3 cycles, I was bed bound pretty much every day. I was in so much pain. I was passing out, vomiting. I had to crawl from the bed to the bathroom.
Problem is, when you let endometriosis have its full reign of your body, the damage that it causes in just a couple of months.
It's crazy. But the problem is the damage was already there.
You just
and coming off the pill just showed me it.
Yeah.
So yeah, sometimes I'm like, why did you do it? You could have kind of just carried on. At the same time, I was putting my organs, like my vital organs, in a lot of danger. I ended up having nearly double kidney failure because it was choking both my ureters. They were worried it was on my diaphragm, which they still can't rule out.
So just rewind, you came off the pill.
Yeah.
And then
within a couple of cycles was just bed bound pretty much. I had to use a walking stick if I wanted to go out. I don't recognize who that woman was.
Your GP again at that point?
Yeah, so I rang and I had written everything down, not just period symptoms but every single symptom I was feeling, because it was every day at that point. It wasn't just around my period. And I wrote everything down. It's about 2 sides of A4, and I feel a little bit sorry for her because I literally got through and I just read this whole thing and I didn't even pause for breath. I was literally just like, you will listen. Yeah. You will, because at that point, I'd reached rock bottom, like mentally as well as physically. And she kind of just went quiet. And then she said, okay, yeah, I think we need to send you for a scan. So I went for my ultrasound scan. And I had a text message on 5:30 on a Friday evening being like, your scan is abnormal. We need to talk to you urgently. Please contact us.
So panic.
Right. At 5:30 on a Friday. I don't know if you've ever tried to call your GP at that time.
Yep.
It's not happening. So I had the most awful weekend. And first thing on Monday, I rang and a doctor I'd not spoken to before, he looked up the results and he went, oh, yeah, there are some abnormalities, but there's no endometriosis, so there's no further action required. And I was heartbroken because I finally thought I was kind of like on the pathway to figuring this out.
So this emergency phone call that you were supposed to have was actually just them to tell you that they don't think anything's wrong.
Yeah.
But that makes me so mad again, because how many doctors have said to mm-hmm. patients, your ultrasound was normal,
yeah,
your MRI was normal,
yeah,
your bloods are normal.
But something's wrong.
No, but the thing is, endometriosis cannot be diagnosed using those tests.
It can sometimes show up on ultrasound if somebody is exceptionally skilled.
Mm.
And it can sometimes, more than ultrasound, show up on MRI, which should always be done for surgical planning anyway. It can, you know, especially with a skilled radiologist and a skilled person reading the scan, you know, it can be diagnosed there. Mine yeah. was, they did see it, but not the full extent. But endometriosis can hide on scans, and it hugely depends on the skill of the person doing it and reading it. And unfortunately, we don't have enough specialists in endometriosis, particularly in this country. And accessing them is ridiculously hard and expensive. And that's what I had to do. I had to go privately in the end.
But there wow. needs to be awareness that GPs mm. cannot rule out or say to anybody, mm-hmm. you do not have endometriosis,
no.
because it can only be diagnosed a specialist gynecologist.
Yeah. Yeah. So you went private.
So I went for a private MRI, and that did show endometriosis and adenomyosis as well. And the adenomyosis was kind of really flippantly thrown in at the end. It was like, yes, you do have endometriosis. It is quite serious. This is what we're going to do. Oh, and by the way, you also have adenomyosis, but that's fine. It's so just like a cake.
What is that?
Just like a cake.
Yeah, honestly, he explained it like a cake. So adenomyosis is a sister condition of endometriosis. Okay. They're not always co-occurring, but they very, very often are. And whilst endometriosis is a whole body disease that is not a uterine condition, adenomyosis is a uterine condition. And it's where the lining of the womb burrows into the muscular wall, and it creates, they call it a really icky term, but they call it a boggy uterus.
Mm.
And it can cause a huge amount of pain. The only way I can describe it is it felt like a literal bowling ball was sat in my pelvis trying to break the bones from the inside.
So being like pushed.
It was, yeah, it was awful. But I was told by that surgeon adenomyosis doesn't cause pain, and you know, it's absolutely fine, it's just like a cake. where the layers get a bit squished, was what I said. So I was overwhelmed. At this point, I didn't really know much about these diseases. I was just so grateful that finally somebody was listening to me. And he was like, yep, we can operate. Let's get this done. It can be done in a couple of months. So I was like, sign me up, sign me up. And I went in and I had surgery, and it was not the most successful thing in the world.
What stage was your endometriosis?
So he said two, which I also want to clarify, staging, like, it doesn't mean a great deal in terms of symptoms and how it affects your life. So you can be stage one and be debilitated, or you can be stage four and have silent endo, so you don't have any symptoms whatsoever. So yeah, the staging is, it's more about organ involvement, the type of endometriosis, because there's three different types. So it's very much in use for surgeons. And I was still in so much pain, like so much pain. And it was all the same type of pain that I was having before. I was expecting surgical healing pain, but I wasn't expecting to be in that much pain still.
It's a distinct pain.
It is.
It's like the worst period pain you've ever had, but in places that it shouldn't be. Mm. It's a very distinct pain. It'd be like breaking your leg, bone pain. Like, you know, yeah.
you can't quite
localize where it is. But when you're bleeding inside, you're irritating the lining of your stomach, which has a similar effect of having peritonitis. It's the blood is irritating that lining, which is causing swelling and edema and
it's a whole body disease as well. So like, it isn't just abdominal pain. I had back pain, hip pain, flank pain, my legs would give way because of it. I'd had chest pain.
And this was every month every day.
And it went from, I think I came off the pill summer 2021, and my first surgery was May 2022, and then it continued after that first surgery. And I went to him and I said, like, I'm still in so much pain, I'm a little bit concerned. And I said, I'm also really concerned that adenomyosis is still playing like a huge role in this pain, and I would like to talk about other options. And he looked at me and he said, I'm the doctor. I've been to medical school. I've done my job. I think this is now starting to become a bit psychosomatic. Whoa.
So they thought you were mentally feeling the pain rather than actually being a physical thing.
Yeah.
To quote Friends, no uterus, no opinion.
Definitely.
And obviously you talked at the very beginning about pain, mm-hmm. meaning the reason you gave up your baking. Is this around the same time?
Yeah. So I sold the business in March 2021.
Because the pain
was just, it was getting too much. And the problem was as well, like, you can't just call in sick to somebody's wedding. You can't do that. I was literally turning up to wedding venues and running to a bathroom to be sick and then coming out and putting on the biggest smile and being
This is the other thing people, I don't think, realise is how much and how debilitating a form of illness. Like, for me with my cancer, mm-hmm. you know, I had to give up my career.
Yeah.
And, you know, as much as it doesn't seem like the biggest thing in the world for some people, it is huge. And it's like you've worked so hard to build up a business that you absolutely, by the sounds mm-hmm. of it, loved. And you'd probably still doing it now if you could.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't. And for somebody now to look in from the outside and just be like, oh, that's all right, you can do something else.
Yeah. But I'd love a break from work, is the one I always got.
Oh, like, yeah, I'd love to not have to do it to work every day.
And actually, you're like, well, it's so much more than that. It's your financial stability. It's your independence. It's your identity.
Own, if it's your business, it is very much your personality as well, isn't it?
It's your life. And it's a huge, huge trend.
And you're in a patient role because, you know, it's not just a hospital appointment. You're going home, you're still feeling pain, you're physically unwell all day, every day. And that, yes, that takes a mental toll and it does get you down. But that's where this medical gaslighting of people not taking the time to actually look and listen and realizing, yeah, you might be crying in an appointment, but it's not because you're not creating these symptoms because you're crying and you're down. Mm-hmm. You're crying and down because you're in pain and you're not being listened to.
I had a thoracic surgeon when we were talking about the diaphragmatic endo, and he basically said, look, there's something on the scan, but it's not enough, and it's not enough to rule it out. So, you know, because of the area, we don't want to just operate and for no reason. And then he goes to me, have you tried being happier?
Shut up.
And I was like, what? I was like, and he was like, well, studies have shown that when we're happier, we can deal with pain better. And I was like,
wow,
I might be happier if I wasn't in pain.
Wow.
And wow. He just kind of was just like, well, you know, it's worth a thought.
Oh, yeah. So I'm just going to go and put a smile on my face and it's going to cure all my problems.
So meanwhile, you're bleeding and it's affecting all your organs and you're in pain. Someone says you need to be happier because that's going to get the endometriosis fixed, isn't it?
Yay.
Oh, my goodness. So how did you get past this point of feeling like you're not being listened to, coming up against brick walls? You're still in pain. The first surgery hasn't helped that much.
So at that point, I started doing a lot more research myself. And I kind of found a community on Instagram, of all places, of other people with endometriosis who really knew their stuff, were working with worldwide experts, doing literature reviews, looking at the latest stuff, all this kind of thing. And I started talking to them a lot and they were just like, uh-uh, do not accept that. And so I went and I did my own research again and I found somebody who was a true endometriosis specialist. And I never knew the importance of that before. I thought, oh, it's in gynecology. This guy is like, you know, really great. There's this real pervasive thing, especially in endometriosis care, where, oh, it's just a period issue, which it's not. Therefore, we can just have a go. We'll be able to whip that out. And it's just not true. Because when I had my MRI with the actual specialist, he was just like, those are some diseased organs. He was just like, there's a plaque of 8x5 centimeters that they've missed.
So he could see it all.
He could see it all. And he was just like, that's choking that ureter. There was another one. I've got permanent kidney damage in one of my kidneys because of it. He was like, you know, it's going towards your bladder, your bowel. He was like, your adenomyosis is way more advanced. Like, you know, if you want a hysterectomy, we will do that.
Can I ask, was this under private still?
This is still private, okay. Yeah.
And the people that you found in the community, would you say the majority of them also were diagnosed quite late in life?
Yes.
Yeah.
So the average diagnosis time in the UK has just gone up, unfortunately, to just under 9 years. But from my own experience and the experience of the thousands of women, not just in the UK, but around the world, you know, it's 15, 20, 25, 30.
So people are waiting or not getting their diagnosis till 30s or 40s, ideally.
Oh, at least, yeah.
That's, you know, that's something that I think we've spoken about before with other chats, but like, this is something that needs to be discussed to children in school at the time that they're 100%. Talking about periods and 100%. What's going to happen to their bodies. Because if people are still just being told, well, heavy periods are normal, and they don't actually know what endometriosis is or what it can cause or where to go to get that help.
Somebody said to me recently, they said, do you ever stop and think about how different your life could have been if you were diagnosed and believed at age 11?
If it is actually caught at that point from a medical experience, if it is caught at a very, very young age and treated at a very, very young age, can it be kind of almost halted to any progression?
So there is no cure. I mean,
the difficulty with the pubertal years, sort of teenage years, is there is that possibility that when you start your periods, some people will naturally have a bit more erratic periods. And so it would always be difficult, even if we had all the, there was no funding issues and we had all the resources, teenagers will have very varied periods as their body is adjusting to puberty. But then when you sort of hit sort of that adult years and 18 in your regular rhythm, if we had a better way of looking into it, again, it could be managed and halt progression. There is no cure at the minute. They're working on a cure and but they're getting closer, but you'd stop the progression. I think the key at the minute with what treatment is available, the focus needs to be on early diagnosis and the right medication to halt progression, to protect women's fertility and to protect the morbidity. Morbidity is the impact on your quality of life from disease.
Yeah.
And with your situation, you know, it has gone to a lot of areas within the body. And that's
been
found
in every single organ of the body.
So if, in hindsight, if you had been diagnosed 10 years prior, you'd probably be looking at half that damage or even less.
Even less. Okay. I probably would still have my uterus and fertility. And I wouldn't have kidney damage.
So how old are you now?
I'm 34.
And you say fertility.
Yeah.
Have you got children?
No.
Have you ever wanted children?
So it's a really interesting point because I think when we talk about fertility, especially with endometriosis, adenomyosis, we talk about two camps. We talk about the women who definitely are child-free by choice. They don't want children. They're really happy with that. they're just, get it out. And then you have the women who really want a family. That's all they've ever wanted. They will do anything. And we talk about these two extremes, but actually life happens in the gray.
Yeah.
And there are so many of us in that middle ground, and that's where I was. I didn't know if I wanted children. And I always thought maybe leaning towards not, but maybe one day. I didn't know.
But having that choice taken away from you almost makes you have to. I'm sort of in a similar position with my fertility with cancer. Yeah. I wanted kids. I can't have them due to my treatment I'm on. And it is like you almost have to tell yourself that you don't want children to keep yourself from living that whole, I wish I had that.
Yeah, sort of letting those thoughts. And it's fine if those thoughts come in. I mean, we've just had Mother's Day here in the UK. That was a hard day. And they are going to be hard days. And that's...
Do you allow yourself to kind of grieve on that process?
Yes. Yeah, I've had to. And it's been really, really hard because pretty much the day of my hysterectomy for adenomyosis, my sister-in-law, who I'm very close to geographically and like emotionally, got pregnant. And it was literally to the day of my surgery.
She told you.
No, yeah. she conceived. So it was literally like this process. If she told me on the day of my hysterectomy, that would have been a bit of a conversation. But no, she conceived pretty much on the day of my hysterectomy. Oh, wow. So it was like this really visceral reminder of two parallel paths.
And how different life can be.
It was hard. And the first day that I held my niece, I adore her, she is conscious. But the first day I held my niece, I got into the car with my husband to go home and I cried like I have never cried like that. Yeah. It was like something primeval or primal, I don't know which one of the right word is, like primal.
It's you're so happy for them, but you're so, it just rips something out of you.
Yeah.
And I felt that. I remember my sister phoning me to tell me she was pregnant. She was so nervous because obviously, you know, she knew how much I wanted children. And I remember to this day, I was in Bury St. Edmunds at the Christmas market and she phoned me and I just answered because then she was like, I really want to tell you this thing. I want you to know before so anyone else. And I was like, you know, you have to put this kind of like, oh, wow, that's amazing. And then I came off the phone and I sobbed to my friend. Mm-hmm. I was in such a, and it wasn't that I was upset for her. I wasn't like angry at her. I was really pleased. And that's really hard because you can't be that, you know, I wish I was the person that could be jumping for joy and, you know, but you get that.
You have to allow that though. Yeah. You have to. And also, sorry, also not to like overthink it as well. Like just allow it.
So how long ago was your hysterectomy?
Nearly a year, so it's been 10 months.
Were you told that that was the cure? That
was the for adenomyosis, it is a cure. Mm-hmm. It's like the definitive cure because adeno is a uterine condition, so literally removing the uterus gets rid of the whole
thing. The ovaries.
So no, I was lucky, very, very lucky, in that they were able to preserve my ovaries, which I was super grateful for obviously they do so much for our bodies and our brain function, our bones, everything. So yeah. I was really, really glad for that, although they were very temperamental for quite a while afterwards.
Were you ever given, I don't know if it's an option because of the hormonal stuff, were you ever given an option of trying to save eggs?
No, it was never even a conversation with me to preserve fertility.
Were you almost told you needed this or were you asked?
No, so with my first surgeon, I actually said, I want to have a hysterectomy because this pain is too much.
Okay.
And he was just like, no, adenomyosis doesn't cause that amount of pain. This is, I think it's psychosomatic. My second surgeon was just like, if you want a hysterectomy, we're doing it. And I think at that point, I was in so much pain. I was probably very insistent that I was in the camp of never wanting children.
And you weren't thinking about the potential.
Get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And I do not, I really want to stress, I do not regret my hysterectomy in any way, shape or form. I would do it again tomorrow because the difference in my quality of life is wild.
Did you have a day of pain-free or a week of pain-free?
Since my surgery, no.
You've not had a...
No, 10 months on, I haven't. The adenomyosis pain has gone, so that bowling ball pain has gone.
The endo pain.
But the endo and the pain that endometriosis has caused is still there because...
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You can remove all of the disease, but that disease has been growing in there for, in my case, 22 years. It's done a lot of damage. Yeah.
So your organs are sort of not working 100%.
My muscles, my tissues, everything.
So day to day, you know, you're sitting here today, looking amazing, looking so well. Had to explain a day like in the life of you. Like, is it hard getting out of bed in the morning? Do you struggle with, you know, going out and about and actually seeing?
I do find it difficult to wake up. I wake up in pain. And so I have a lot of pain medication that I'm on. So my day-to-day now is doing advocacy and campaigning for endometriosis and adenomyosis. So I'm very fortunate that I can do that mostly from home.
Let's just like take a moment to talk about that, because you have become an absolute warrior and voice and major advocate for endometriosis and adenomyosis. And you're also a UN Women UK delegate. We are both delegates this year.
I'm sitting next to, you know, very important women.
You know, trying to be a voice for change and empowering women's rights. Yeah. And you've done so much work and research in this field. And, you know, just talk a bit about what you're doing now to try and change the system.
So I started off with an Instagram account, and it started because I was lonely, and it's very clever. It makes you feel like you're the only one going through it, which we know is not true, but that's just how it feels. And I just started, it was like a visual diary, really. It was very much for myself. And then I did a post Halloween of 2022, and it was a photograph, and my friend, who's a makeup artist, and she also has endometriosis, fibroids, I don't know, she's got the full bingo card. She did basically prosthetics and special effects makeup on my abdomen to show what the pain I was feeling on the inside would look like on the outside. And I sat on those photos for months because they were kind of like a little personal project between us. And I was so tired of being told, but you don't look sick. So I did that, and I posted it on Halloween because I was just like, oh, that'll be funny. It's the scariest thing I can think of. Why not? You know, I was not feeling well, so I was like, I can't be asked to dress up. Why not? Just post that. And it went crazy. Like, it went viral. It was picked up by accounts with millions of followers all around the world. And I was getting thousands of messages from women around the world every week for about 3 or 4 months. And it was just a light bulb moment for me that this problem is so much bigger than me.
Did your following at this point grow as well? Did they actually?
Yeah. So it did a little bit, but it was more for me about the engagement rather than the number. And the engagement was just so high. Like, sometimes I didn't even have to do anything. I just put something up, and the conversations between other patients was like so heartwarming that they were making these connections and helping each other out. And so I did that. And that's when I kind of realized, okay, this is so much bigger than me, that maybe there's something else I can do. So I started doing more educational things because I realized that there was just misinformation is everywhere when it comes to these diseases. Mm-hmm. And it's the information that's out there is not always in the most accessible or empathetic.
I don't think I've ever once watched a telly and something about endometriosis has come up.
So you sometimes see it in March, which is Endometriosis Awareness Month. It's like a little bit, but then it's always got something in there, even if they get the definition right, which is, believe it or not, something to celebrate if that happens, something so basic. Then, you know, then they go on and it's got an incorrect treatment option, or, and it's just, it's so frustrating. I don't even know how it happened. I just somehow, it started to bubble up, and I guess I got a bit of a reputation for good, better or worse. People offline started reaching out, so companies and brands and organizations. And so I realized that actually I could do both. So on my social media, it's very much about holding a safe space and a community for people with endometriosis or their loved ones, mm-hmm. and making sure they feel validated and heard, which is so important. But you also need institutional change if you're going to change the landscape for future generations. So I've started two projects to try and do my bit. I mean, I had a great quote the other day from a friend, and it was, it's not just one tree, it's the whole forest. We can't just tackle one tree, we need to deal with the whole forest. And that's very much true with endometriosis care. And so I have started a project with universities trying to get endometriosis formally on the curriculums. And it's not even on the medical curriculum formally for future doctors, future clinicians, future GPs.
So they don't learn this as a standard?
Not yet. They will.
They will. They will.
You are changing life.
And that's like, you know, I wasn't even taught it in medical school. It wasn't a core
feature. It was more your own experience that you actually managed to be that medically trained, wasn't it?
Yeah. So that's the first one. We're starting with Cambridge University because that's just my university. And then hopefully we can create a blueprint that other universities can follow.
Do they know how many women or how many this actually affects in, you know, is it like 1 in 10?
So there's a figure. There's a figure of 1 in 10. Countries, they're thinking it's more in 1 in 6. But totally worldwide, the figure that they use is 190 million women, and those assigned female at birth.
And this isn't on the medical curriculum,
no.
Even though it could affect 1 in 10 people.
Yeah.
And 1 in 10 women.
Endometriosis and adenomyosis, or endo more so, it impacts organ damage.
Yeah.
You've got fertility, which is a major part of it, which it can cause infertility in different ways, in that it can make it difficult to conceive because of tubes being blocked, blocking eggs from traveling, a whole host of things. Whilst the body is trying to protect itself from the endo, it can then cause you to miscarry because the body can't recognize what's endometriosis versus an embryo, and it just, nope. Just won't accept it. But then you've got the organ damage, which for me particularly, I mean, I went through the fertility issues and I had recurrent miscarriages, and that's how I ended up being diagnosed. And I remember having my first surgery and getting told it's just stage 2, and then suddenly within a year it became stage 4, and I had bowel damage and bladder, and everything was stuck together. People don't realize what that means and the implication of that. I know so many women get told they've got IBS.
Can it get to the point though, when you're saying about the organ damage, that actually it's sort of irreversible, and that could cause you to have die from the fact that your organs fail?
There's been lung collapse. And if you want to be really mercurial about it, endometriosis costs the UK economy 8.2 billion a year. So if you want to be really kind of, you know...
Is that because of the damages it causes now?
It's because of the medical treatment that's needed, because we're diagnosing so late, so there's a lot of damage, so there's recurrent surgeries, because we're not doing the most efficient type of surgery, which is excision. Mm. We don't have the specialists to do that widespread, so they're using a cheaper, less efficient method. It's because of loss of work. It's because of so many different things. 8.2 billion it costs, and yet they still don't see that as a priority. But that's the key thing. We're not just looking at obs and gynae students, which obviously is where endometriosis typically sits under. We're looking at where we can put it in across the whole curriculum, so that even if a urology specialist sees some of these symptoms, they can be like, oh, this could be endometriosis. Same for a bowel surgeon or a thoracic surgeon or a GP.
GPs particularly, because they are the first point of call, and they are the first people who start trialing these pills for people with heavy and painful periods.
And girls should be monitored if they have, if they come in to a GP. Okay, you might not flag endometriosis immediately, but at least put on their notes, this needs to be regularly checked. Yeah. We need to kind of go back every year and just see what's happening.
Painful periods, heavy periods, irregular periods, they are all symptoms. They are not diagnoses. And yet currently we are telling girls that they are diagnoses. They're like, oh yeah, you suffer with painful periods.
Yeah.
That's the answer.
Yeah.
They're symptoms. They should be investigated and found out what's causing them.
Especially
those.
Over months, years, you know, even decades.
Yeah.
Can we just take a moment just to really emphasize the impact of not diagnosing it early?
Yeah.
And the organ damage. Mm. I have a bladder that doesn't work. immediately people think that it means that I'm incontinent, and it's like, nope,
no,
I can't feel it. I struggle, and I have to catheterize at times. My bowel doesn't work because of this endometriosis wrapping itself around it. Mm-hmm. So now I'm looking at potentially facing more surgery. At some point, I might need a bag. What's your experience of the complications of it getting to as bad as it was?
So I have a lot of question marks. So it definitely wrapped itself around my ureters, which nearly caused double kidney failure. And because of that, the right side one is damaged and needs monitoring now for the rest of my life.
Your right kidney?
Yeah. So that was from the ureteral endometriosis. It's definitely buggered up. I can use that word. Definitely buggered up my bladder. It is so painful to go to urinate. It is honestly so painful. It's like somebody's taking a cricket bat.
It cramps, isn't it?
Yeah. I get bowel issues, so they need to investigate that now.
Does it tend to affect the lower organs before the higher?
Pelvic area are kind of like the primary locations, but extrapelvic endometriosis, as it's called, is not as rare as the literature has sort of led us to believe. Okay. It's just rare that we investigate it. No. You had it in your nose?
In my nose.
You had it in your nose?
Yeah,
I've never met anyone with the nose.
So hang on,
what was this you had in your nose?
Endometriosis.
In your nose?
In my nose. Every time I would have a period, I would have a nosebleed, and which is why when I was pregnant with my second, when I was telling them I am bleeding, something is not right, I was bleeding there. Every time I would bleed there, I would bleed there. And I kept saying to them, and they were like, and I'm like, no, endometriosis seeds elsewhere.
It would bleed, but you wouldn't.
So the endometrial tissue that you have responds to the hormones, and the same hormones that make you bleed down there.
So it just start running?
Yeah. So I would have a full on nosebleed.
And for how long?
Like 10 minutes to an hour. And it would go on for as long as I was having a period. So whatever hormones was making that, and I kept saying to them,
did they say put a tampon up there?
Yeah. Well, they do that.
They do.
Yeah. But again, people don't realise endometrial tissue, you can have it anywhere.
Anywhere. It's been on the eyelid, the bone, the skin, the belly button, the lungs, the heart, the brain, every single organ and every single bodily system, so the nervous system, the lymphatic system, everything has been found. Yeah.
And does it, in day-to-day life, do you feel, do you get seen as someone who is disabled?
No. So I actually have a blue badge because my pain can come out of nowhere, and when it does, I'm vomiting. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. So I have a blue badge and I used it, but the problem is it's classed as an invisible disability.
Of course, yeah.
So I used it one day and I just popped in to get some food from somewhere, and the guy literally came in and it was packed, this place. And he was just like, is that your car? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, yeah, because you look disabled. And he was shouting at me and I was mortified. And I was just like,
I have a blue badge. And
And I was like, do I have to prove it to you? And he went, yeah. And I was
Did you not just show him the picture on it and go, that's me?
Well, it was still in the car. He was like, where's your blue badge then? And I was like, in the car where it's supposed to be visible on the dashboard. And he was just like, yeah, right. And he was so aggressive, and I was just getting so more and more upset. And I was like, do you want me to show you the scars where I've had my organs removed? Like, I don't understand what the issue is here. He basically just stormed off in the end.
Was he an employee?
No.
Okay.
No, he was a customer. Not one person came and asked if I was okay in a packed restaurant.
Wow.
Not one person.
Again, this whole invisible disability thing is something that I think people are just not used to, because they're just used to, someone getting out with a wheelchair or a stick, or, with no arm or no leg. But actually they don't see that what you've had done and what the pain causes and how it actually can be so debilitating on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. If you're going out, you might put your makeup on and put a nice dress on, or put something that makes you feel happy on.
Yeah.
Because you want to show the world that you're okay.
If you dress the way you felt, no one would come near you.
Right? How would that make
you feel? Go for it. Show the depression, show the anxiety, the pain across your whole entire body. Why not? If that's what it's like, it feels like that's what it would take sometimes.
And if someone broke their leg and was in a wheelchair, they'd be completely seen to be, disabled.
Yeah.
Yet they might be 100% healthy
and
just have had an accident.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think I've gone for so long of not being believed and not being heard and being questioned about the symptoms that I was struggling with for so long, it just felt like being back there. And it just put me in a place where I just had no confidence, and I'm a confident person normally, so it was just, yeah, it was awful.
And how do you get yourself out of those bad days when you go into a dark place mentally, mm-hmm. because it becomes too much? Mm-hmm. How do you get yourself out of it?
I think that's so hard and so personalised, isn't it? And the mental health impacts of living with a lifelong incurable condition, especially one as debilitating as this, is just not talked enough. I reached a really, really low point. I got to a point where I couldn't see a future or a life outside of pain. And it was just like this big black cloud that was engulfing me, and I couldn't find a way out. And I'd say that was like my lowest point, because I just couldn't see a life, a future for myself. And it was actually my husband, and he was like, I think I've reached a point where I can't help you further than this. Like, I just don't know what to do. So he suggested that I ask if there was any kind of like therapy available or anything like this. And it was very much like I didn't have to fight. I know a lot of people have to fight to gain access to that. But the GP just said, yeah, that's fine. Self-refer to here. There'll be a bit of a wait, but it'll be fine. And that really, really helped me. It didn't take away any of my symptoms. Don't get me wrong. I know some people think
that. Is it
that.
Just talking and feeling like you're being heard?
A little bit. But it was more than that. For me, it was because it had taken away so much from me. It had taken my career, my identity, my confidence, my body image. It was finding that again.
Yeah.
So it wasn't so much dealing with my symptoms. I've been dealing with them for 20 odd years. You know, I've got quite good at that, unfortunately. It was more this new bit of losing who I was, mm-hmm. that I was really struggling with. So for me, the therapy was more about that and finding out what I love and what I enjoy doing, and finding like ways to get that similar feeling that I can manage now.
Mm.
So, whether that was, I used to enjoy going to like art galleries or something, and obviously I couldn't go and do that. It was, okay, well, how can we get that same response and that same feeling? So it was things like that that really helped me. I'm very, very lucky. My husband is incredible.
How long have you been married?
We've been married 5 years, but we've been together 14.
Oh, and it's so, again, it affects their life. Because so things much. Like the fertility, so things much. Like, you know, when you are in pain and you maybe had a nice day planned, it really impacts their life, and they become maybe a bit of a carer to you, or they don't know how to fix it. But obviously you've been together a long time, so he's really understanding how hard you have had to fight to get the diagnosis and the treatment.
And he, you're spot on. He was just like, I felt like a carer. I felt like, you know, and we've had so many honest conversations about it, especially now we're kind of out of the worst of it for now. You know, he would say he felt like his stresses and his worries about his life always came second, and he was like, obviously, as they should if you're going through something medical like that, but it is also hard. He basically did all of the cooking, all of the cleaning, he did everything, and then he was also the sole breadwinner for us, like the sole earner for the household, and I used to be the breadwinner, so that was a huge dynamic shift. And I think when you marry someone as well, like, you have these hopes and these goals and these dreams for your life together.
Yeah.
And they're not just mine, they're his too. And his have got completely upended and put on hold and all these things. So, it has a huge impact on the people that surround you. I always like envision endo as like a weird, rooty, kind of creepy plant.
I do.
Yeah. Please. And it like wraps around your insides, but then it also breaks out and wraps around the people that are closest to you. It's not just us. Obviously, we bear the brunt of it, but, you know, its effects are so far-reaching.
And I think that's the case with many disabilities, especially the hidden ones, because they're having to kind of deal with that side of it as well, with you being maybe more anxious about doing stuff because, you know, you don't want to be judged. And how do you see the future with it? Like, in terms of what you're doing on the advocating stuff, in terms of your own health, like, can you see a future? Are you looking at hopefully a sort of more positive future, in the sense that you now know how to sort of advocate for yourself and to make sure that the surgeons and things will potentially give you those options in future?
Yes. So I definitely have a future that I can see and that I want to work towards now. So I am fully grateful for being out of that dark place. Yeah, absolutely. It's knowing what to look out for. It's monitoring it. It's if you are having any concerns, go straight away. Don't like trivialize your symptoms. Don't put them down. Don't gaslight yourself anymore. Yeah. Don't blame yourself either. I used to blame myself so much, like, oh, I'm not doing this, or I did this, or, you know, I didn't speak up enough. No. You can do everything right and endometriosis will still grow. It will still flare up.
Yeah.
You know, you can do, there is no guilt, no blame. So yeah, for me, it's personally, it's about having that self-advocacy, and it's having a little strategy and a toolbox almost to cope with the day-to-day stuff. So again, my husband is an incredible support, but it doesn't have to be a husband either. Like, it could be your friend, your mom, like, it doesn't matter. But yeah, so my husband and I had a conversation whilst I was at my baseline.
Yeah.
So not during a flare, because he's a fixer, right? He wants to be able to, like, make people better. And so we almost got into, like, a little bit of a tension zone, because he wanted to fix me. And he was like, what do you need? Tell me what you need and I'll do it. And I was in so much pain. And I'm like, I don't know. And it kind of became this source of tension for us. So we sat down while I was at my baseline. And he was like, right, what symptoms do you struggle with? And what soothes those symptoms? What helps you get through a flare? And he wasn't like, you know, what gets rid of it? Because he knows that really annoys me. But it was, what soothes you? What soothes the symptom? And so we created, like, this little toolbox of things that he knows. If I'm struggling with pain, that's what he needs to go and get. If it's nausea, that's what he needs to go and get. If we're out of the house, that's what he needs to do. Like, and it's honestly been such a game changer for us. And just having that little toolbox makes me feel a little bit more.
Unless you explain that to the person, they're never going to know.
No.
And maybe people listening might realize that is a good thing to apply for their lives to help their dynamic.
Honestly, it's so, so important. And it's really important to do it when you're at a baseline, not when you're in a flare. Because, like, I don't know about you, but I could not articulate anything, figure anything out. It's literally just survival mode at that point. So, yeah, personally for me, that's definitely a much more optimistic kind of view of my healthcare. I know that it's likely to recur. I know there are a lot of other issues that have been caused by the endometriosis indirectly. Because imagine how much pain you have to be in, right, to willingly be cut open for the chance of pain relief.
Yeah.
Or when the fact that you're so young and you're asking for a hysterectomy, you're asking to be put into early menopause and all the risks to the bones that come with it.
And just having an operation.
Like, take my uterus away, please. And the other thing that we always end on is, on a morning, what is it that makes you smile when you get up?
Oh, that's a good one. Probably, this is going to sound really cliche. My husband and my cats.
Lovely fluffy.
Love my cats. But also the community, like the endometriosis community, they crack me up. They give me so much hope and just, yeah, they've become such close friends and allies.
If people want to find you, what is your handle on Instagram? As you said, you're doing a page.
So clever.
It's gendometriosis.
Gendometriosis.
With a dot after gen.
We'll add it onto the notes.
Thank you. But you can also find me at They Said What Project as well, which is another one of them.
Oh my goodness, just a moment on that. the They Said What is brilliant.
Thank you.
I get so angry though.
Yeah.
It's
about what people say.
It's the inflammatory, I can't believe someone said that to you.
I need to buy this page.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just for endometriosis. It's basically medical dismissal across all of women's healthcare.
I need to see this.
It basically came from the straw that broke the camel's back moment for me was before my hysterectomy, a surgeon who didn't perform it was a different one. He said to me, obviously in a very emotional meeting about taking away your uterus and your reproductive organs. And he said to me, Jen, I've got three children. So maybe the fact that you can't have any will balance out the environmental impact of mine.
I just can't believe it. When I read that last week, I think I threw my phone down and shouted out, what the hell?
I was so stunned.
Did you realise as he said it?
Did you have that moment of, I can't believe I just said that out loud?
No. Wow. And later on, I was emotional about the operation and he handed me a box of tissues and he was like, oh, don't worry. Every woman cries in my office. And I'm just like, you're not kidding.
Right, but I need to see this page.
Yeah, but basically that was the moment that it took me a long time to process that statement because obviously I had the surgery and had to recover from that too.
Mm-hmm.
But once I had and I processed it, I was just like, enough. I refuse to internalize that one. Because we do, as women, we internalize these gaslighting comments, these dismissive comments, these mocking comments, because we are hoping to get healthcare. So we internalize it in the hopes that we will then get what we need. And it is so, so wrong. But yeah, it's not about attacking a particular doctor. It's not about attacking any group of doctors. It's about highlighting a really historic and systemic issue that is embedded into our healthcare system. And it has to change.
It sounds like you are making incredible strides to make that change. And very excited to see where you go with it, because it all sounds incredible. And I know it's not great having the experience yourself, but you hopefully will change the lives of many thousands of women going forward.
Thank you. And likewise to you guys for this project. I can't wait to see it all unfold.
I'm so proud to have you here and be able to work with you a bit more. Yeah. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Mortal and Strong podcast. If you want more information about today's voice or how to get support on any of the issues we've discussed today, please head to our website, www.mortalandstrong.com. And remember, click subscribe, find us on all social media platforms, and to find out ways of how to support what we are doing or more information on the project, head to our website. Thank you for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.